How did you know that that was the skill for you to pursue? Like, I'm trying to think about how can our diehards, if they haven't figured out their skill to pursue, how do they even get there?
Well, it's kind of like the name of your show. you have to sell, and until you sell, nothing happens.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to an amazing edition of Sell or Die. It's the best podcast on the planet for sales and personal development. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling. I wrote the Sales Manifesto, and
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and author of Sales in a New York Minute. Welcome to Sell or Die.
And welcome to you, Jen. We are at our 1 month wedding anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to make sure that we pump that out there so that people can understand it's a me and you thing now.
Oh, yeah. I posted, a series of pictures today on Instagram. There's already like over 200 likes and like 60 or 70 comments.
Whoa.
Insanity. I love it. Cool. So if you don't follow me on Instagram, you can check out some of our wedding photos at Jen in any minute.
Okay, so we got a big guest tonight.
We do.
It's Mike Dillard.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know who Mike Dillard is right now, but you will when this episode is over.
If you don't know who he is, you quite might be living under a rock. Like, he is the bomb.com. He is amazing, and he brings us everything in this episode.
He's going to talk about building multi-million dollar businesses from his home, selling them, and then he made one, sold it, made another one, sold it, made another one, sold it. He started in network marketing, and all he did was printed a booklet, and that booklet went viral and nuts.
He printed it at Kinko's, you guys.
Now FedEx. here's the real issue. This guy had success and then a health failure. And that health failure caused him to understand what was important in his life, what impacted him in a way that went way beyond money and success. So I want you to pay attention to what's going on today. But before we get the mic, we have a 5-star review.
Yes, we do. Jazzy Loves Cats writes, Jeffrey and Jen provide proven strategies, fun and no BS tactics that actually work. Don't attempt to make another sale without listening to the Sell or Die podcast.
Damn, that Jazzy Loves Cats knows her stuff.
Yeah, that Jazzy. She's cat woman.
Hey, thank you, Jazzy. That is amazing. And it is people like you that bring us these reviews that keep us wanting and loving doing this show.
So right. So if you're out there and you have, like, those guys are actually pretty good, why don't you just tell us about it?
That's right.
I mean, we're trying to impact you with information that you can use to go out and make a few more sales and make a few more bucks. That's the purpose of the podcast. Pardon my peas. But I think that if you look at it from the perspective of we can help you, then just let us know you did.
All right. Now it's time. You guys, you are going to love this episode. I know I did. Let's get to Mike Dillard, entrepreneur, dreamer, true American success story. This is going to be an episode you'll want to listen to not once, but twice.
Diehards, listen up. We have an amazing guest today, the great Mike Dillard. Over the past 12 years, started 3 companies from scratch in 3 different industries and grew each of them to more than 8 figures in revenue. Built the first 7-figure company at the age of 27 while he was waiting tables. Built an email list of more than 1 million subscribers. Grown a podcast to more than 5 million downloads. Businesses have made over $60 million in revenue, and that ain't hay. And done all of this from the comfort of his own home. Diehards, welcome the great Mike Dillard.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've accomplished a lot in the last 29 years. And you're a daddy.
I am.
That's like the most important part of the deal.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome, and he'll be 9 this year, and he's starting to take an interest in what dad does for a living and entrepreneurship, which is really neat. So I'm excited about it.
That's you should cool. teach him to sell lemonade on the corner for $5 a glass.
You know, he is very fortunate in the fact that he goes to a very small private school here in Austin, and they're growing. There's a bunch of locations around the country now where the entire curriculum is based on entrepreneurship.
Oh, wow.
So whoa.
Even by the age of 7, when he started there, every quarter they get into teams of 3 or 4. And they're mixed ages, and they come up with a business idea, make a business plan, put a keynote presentation to present, go out and build the business, and then they sell their products at a fair every quarter to all the parents.
That's really cool.
Wow. Cash or credit cards?
Yeah, so far cash, but it's pretty impressive. They'll walk away with $100 in their pocket each day, and then they go back and they pay the teachers for cost of goods sold, and they learn about accounting and taxes that way. And
I love that.
At age 7 or 8. I wish I had that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about you, Mike. Our diehards are a lot of them are familiar with your story and your work, but for those who aren't, can you tell us how you got your start with the booklet at Kinko's and that whole deal?
Sure. I got my start in entrepreneurship back in college, which was around the year 2000. And that's Web 1.0 days. So no video, no YouTube, no social media. And if you're a broke college student wanting to start a business, really your best option at the time was network marketing. So that's what I got involved in. And I failed miserably at it for 5 years straight. I think the only people that ever bought anything from me was, you know, my family members. And I, after 5 years, realized that I need to do something differently. Something's not working here. And I fortunately had a mentor that gave me a big dose of truth one day. And he basically said, look, the reason you're not succeeding or making the money you want to make is because you haven't become a person who is capable of doing that. And so up until that point, you know, it's easy when you're just getting started to think that success is going to come from something outside of yourself, like the opportunity or the team that you join or the product that you're selling. And you think success is going to become as a result of any of those things. And again, after joining 12 different companies and never making a dime over 5 years, it's like there's a piece of the puzzle that I'm not getting here. And those words of wisdom for him were the light bulb moment for me. And I realized that if I was going to make money like a professional, I had to actually become a professional. And up until that point, I hadn't really mastered any particular skills yet. So I dove into direct response marketing. I found Dan Kennedy, and I found out what copywriting was. I was a very shy, introverted person at the time. So network marketing was the complete opposite business that I should have been involved in. And yet that was what I had invested 5 years of my life in. I wanted to really figure it out and make it work. So what I realized is that you could use the written word to write a sales letter that would tell everybody about your product and service or the business and do all the selling for you. And at the end of the day, they could just give me a call or send me an email ready to get started. And that was it. And so that was my big goal, was to stop chasing people, stop calling leads, stop doing cold calls, and to get 20 to 30 people a day to reach out to me who already knew what the scoop was and who might have a question or two, but other than that, they were ready to get started. So that was it. I learned copywriting over the course of about a year, year and a half. I wrote a sales page and recorded some sales audios that sold my opportunity. I learned how to use Google AdWords and started generating leads to a capture page. And that was brand new. That was brand new stuff way back then. And within 18 months, I went from waiting tables at PF Chang's to becoming the number one earner in my company and making 7 figures. I think within my second or third year, I made $6 million that year by the age of 30. And the book that I ended up writing called Magnetic Sponsoring was essentially a training guide that I wrote for my team on how to do what I was doing. But a bunch of other leaders in different companies got a hold of it and wanted to share it with their organizations. So I ended up making it into a real mainstream book that I sold for $40 a copy, and made around $25 million over the next 5 years selling that book and some additional marketing courses that I put together for that industry.
Isn't it amazing how many network marketing companies are not around?
Yeah.
Like, I started in network marketing also, and I will tell you that the attitude training that I got and the success training that I got was a launching pad for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's an industry. I'm glad I'm not a part of anymore. I learned a lot there. I think it's a great place to learn about business. But I think once you understand how to sell, you don't need or want to be a part of that industry necessarily anymore. It doesn't make sense from a business model perspective. So I think people graduate from it pretty quickly once they figure things out. I think there's a quote in my book that was, network marketing is an industry of marketing and promotion pursued by people who have no idea how to market or promote.
Okay. I want to go back to those first five years, because we have, you know, a lot of people struggle to make the sales that they're hoping for, and they're hoping for that $6 million year, right? What kept you going that whole time?
The thought of having to work for someone else for the rest of my life was infinitely more painful than the significant amount of pain I went through for those 5 years. I lived in a $300 a month apartment. I didn't have any furniture for years. I did my laundry at a laundromat with quarters. Every dollar I made, I bought books and courses or went to training events. And it was super painful, and it was a huge struggle to keep trying and keep trying and fail and fail and fail and fail. The single biggest, you know, turning point was what I mentioned earlier, was deciding to invest in myself and not stop thinking about the business and start investing in myself and mastering the skill set. And for me, again, it was copywriting and AdWords. And once you actually master the skill that you can start to apply, whether it's for your own business or even somebody else's, that builds confidence and it starts to build momentum. I remember one of the first things that I did as I was learning Google AdWords and how to code a web page was, you've either got a lot of time or you've got a lot of money. For me, I had a lot of time. I did not have a lot of money. And so I would go to my Upline members who did have money and very little time. And I'd say, hey, I'll run a lead generation campaign for you. If you'll take care of the ad spend, I'll run the campaign and manage that. And I would add on a dollar extra per lead for my cost. So if I could generate, you know, 50 leads per day for them, I'd put $50 in profit in my pocket and get paid to essentially learn how to use AdWords. And so that was just one of those little turning points that really sent me down the right direction. And then copywriting was the other big piece that really allowed me to write effective ads, landing pages that converted, emails that, you know, persuaded people to take action. And it's that's it. If you come to me and you ask me what's the secret to success, I'm going to ask you, what skill have you mastered? 99 out of 100 times, the answer I get back is, I don't know, or nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Who else besides Dan Kennedy helped you in writing?
You know, Gary Halbert, Perry Marshall, Jay Abraham, David Ogilvy. I mean, Scientific Advertising, Claude Hopkins.
Oh, there's, yeah. Claude Hopkins is like the original, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff that goes way back to the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And the real secret to learning how to write copy for me was to write out their sales letters by hand. So most of it today is done in video form. So you can use a service like rev.com to transcribe sales videos that you know are doing really well. You're seeing them everywhere. You're seeing them for a long period of time. A lot of sales webinars, I'll just have those transcribed. And if you really want to master copywriting, just write those out by hand and do that every day for 6 months to a year. And you'll really just internalize that skill set and the storytelling structure, the the calls to action. And I don't even know, I mean, I know how to write copy these days, but I just do it without thinking about it at this point. So
how did you know that that was the skill for you to pursue? Like, I'm trying to think about how can our diehards, if they haven't figured out their skill to pursue, how do they even get there?
Well, it's kind of like the name of your show. you have to sell. And until you sell, nothing happens. And there's no way around that. So for me, it was the thought of selling to people in person or from stage was petrifying. So my other option was to do it without talking to people, and learning how to write a sales page and emails and a video script was the only other way to go about that. And the neat part is that you can do it at scale. So back in those days when I was in that industry, the top earners that were getting the awards on stage, making 6-7 figures, were all masters of selling over the phone. That was the most prevalent sales tool we had back then. The challenge was is that you have no leverage. The best in the world might be able to make 10 sales a day after being on the phone 8 to 10 hours a day, maybe more. But they're capped by the number of people they talk to on a daily basis. Where all of a sudden I came in and I put a 20-page sales letter online, and now I'm presenting it to 1,000 people a day without talking to anyone. I win every single time. And so that book ended up really changing that industry because it introduced network marketing to internet marketing for the first time. And that's really what put me on the map. So,
and cool. Did you find that in today's world as a writer, that writing skills are lacking in most people?
Persuasive writing skills, yes, mm-hmm. Without a doubt. There's a ton of psychology that goes into this. There's story structure. There are, the way I think of it is your brain has, or a prospect's brain has a bunch of switches that need to be flipped from red to green. And by default, everybody's walking around jaded and skeptical these days when it comes to sales messages, and all of their switches are flipped to red. Well, if you're going to make a sale, you have to flip all 13 of them to green. And there's an order and a structure on how to do that. And that, to me, is really what the skill of copywriting is learning how to do exactly that.
So I want to switch gears only because you switched gears. You went from this really successful business to then deciding you wanted to help people learn what to do with their money once they had it. So right, how right. did, like, talk to us about that transition and how you got there.
So that was living through the crash of 2008. By that point, I was also turning around the age of 30, and I'd made over $25 million in that first business, and I'd essentially spent all of it. Now, obviously, $25 million is gross revenue, not net. So you take out employees, ad spend, refunds, all of that stuff. You know, I'm netting 7 figures, but it's nowhere near 25. But I'd spent it on a house and boats and Aston Martins and trips and travel and all of this stuff.
Well, the important stuff. Yeah. I hear that. Yeah.
Well, I realized acquiring the ability to make money on demand is a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a blessing, but it can be a curse if you take it for granted and start to use it to get yourself out of trouble because you're not being responsible with that money. And so that was the big lesson that I learned watching the market crash in 08, turning 30 and realizing, like, I've made all of this money and I have nothing to show for it except a lot of really great memories and fun and toys. So it was time to grow up and be an adult. I went to the bookstore and went to the finance and investing section, and every single book was now irrelevant because it was all talking about financial investment strategies that just
weren't there anymore. Yeah.
So I didn't have an answer. And that is really how all of my businesses have started. They've been inspired by a personal problem that I couldn't find an answer or solution to. And for me, it's like, okay, I want to learn how to invest like the wealthy invest. I know they're doing different things with their money that the middle class are not doing. I know they're not walking down to their local Fidelity branch. I know that they're not investing in mutual funds. And you know, things like that. So what are the rich actually doing with their money? That was the primary question that inspired the business. And so I really designed the business to fit a lifestyle. I just got married, just had a baby. I wanted to be able to work from home without any employees, and I wanted to do the least amount of work possible. At the end of the day, my goal was to produce one video interview a month with one of these wealthy individuals to learn from them about their specific area of expertise. And that's it. That was my one deliverable to my customers every single month. But if you took action on that, you could pay for your year's membership, you know, in a week. I launched that business the end of 2010. I want to say November, December 2010. I did have an email list probably of a couple hundred thousand people from the previous business, Magnetic Sponsoring. But I had no idea if anyone was going to buy it. Fortunately, the copywriting skills paid off. The rapport and trust that I built with my audience paid off. And we had over 8,600 people join in the first week. At that point, I realized that this had an opportunity to be something much bigger. It could be something that could have the same kind of impact that Robert Kiyosaki had, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad, for kind of the next generation. And so the lifestyle piece went away. We ended up building out an office here in Austin, building a team of about 12 people. We did 8 figures in revenue in our first year. And yeah, so that was that business, but it was the right message at the right time.
So how did you know when it was time to move into the next business?
I tend to move from business to business after I feel like I've said everything I have to say. So I moved on from network marketing when I accomplished all of my goals. I built the number one, you know, distributorship in my primary business. I built an 8-figure information training company. There was nothing left to do. And with the books and the other courses that I had written, I had nothing left to say. And so at that point, you know, it really was just a time to move on. What is the next challenge? Where am I really weak right now? What do I need to work on myself? And that's really how I pursued it. So
you decided to move on from helping people manage money, a business that made you millions of dollars, and then get into hydroponic technology with a company called Evergrow. I'm curious, what makes someone go from helping people grow money on trees to actually growing trees?
So I live right downtown in Austin, across the street from the headquarters of Whole Foods, which I shop at every day. And I got really frustrated with the fact that you have to be quite wealthy just to buy food that is not covered in poison. And I thought that in this day and age, that's inexcusable. And so I was really inspired by Peter Diamandis over at XPRIZE with his book Abundance and what he talks about there when it comes to decentralizing industries, where we saw how Uber decentralized transportation, Airbnb is decentralized, you know, the hotel industry. And the question I asked was, why hasn't anyone decentralized the agriculture and farming industry? Because if you could do that, you could put organic food in everybody's house at 90 to 95% less cost. You could get rid of all of the unbelievable amount of water waste, all of the pesticides, all of the transportation and pollution that comes along with that. So my first stop was Amazon, and I bought a bunch of ebooks on hydroponics and just started reading those. I went to 99 Designs and I took a Photoshop image of a kitchen and a Voss water bottle photo. And I had a Photoshop guy take the logo off the bottle and fill the middle with plants and superimpose that in the kitchen. And then I started cold calling industrial design firms and I would send them that photo. And I'm like, hey, I want to make an automated hydroponic system for your house that'll grow all of your food for you automatically. And nobody had done that. There were a few systems on the market that you could use to grow your own food at home, but they were manual. And I bought all of them. I used all of them to see what worked, what didn't work. And at the end of the day, they were just a giant pain in the butt to use. And they weren't practical. You couldn't use it if you lived in a high rise in downtown. You had to have access to sunlight and you had to maintain all of it, the pH, the water levels, the nutrient levels, all of that stuff. So it really was like having a the garden and having to take care of that. So I ended up hiring a company called Whipsaw in Silicon Valley. They designed a ton of beautiful high-tech products, very akin to Apple's style, which is what I wanted for the system. I basically wanted it to look like a piece of art for your home that you would have on display. And we just started from scratch with a goal of how can we create a fully automated system that anyone can use without having to have any knowledge about growing food that would just work. And all you'd have to do is drop in the seeds and the system would do the rest.
Wait a minute. Did you have any prior experience in product development?
I've never designed hardware. I've never designed tech. I have no idea how engineering or tooling worked, and I've never grown vegetables, and yet we ended up building the world's first fully automated hydroponic system that did all of that that we set out to do, and I have the prototype, you know, here at the house. The bad news was that it took every penny that I had ever saved or made to get it to that point, a couple million bucks. And we, by the time we hit the prototype stage, took about 2.5 years. And I asked the guys, hey, how much more time and money is this going to take to get to market? Because the original estimate was 500 grand. And they said probably another $2 to $3 million in another 2 years. A decision to raise money from friends or family or pull the plug on the project and lose all of the money that I had put into it. And what was interesting is at the time, a competing company called Click and Grow came out with three platforms that yielded the same amount of produce ours did. So ours grew 36 plants at a time. And they came out with a system that grew 35 plants and then another one that grew, I think, 54. And their design was frankly better than ours. They were funded by Y Combinator. They'd been in business for 8 years. They had 30 employees and were working with universities. So they went about this in a much more responsible, planned out way than just me figuring this out from my desk at home. And they beat our system from a cost perspective and a marketing perspective in every way, except the way that it looked. Ours looked great. Theirs looked like a bookshelf, but it just worked better and it would cost about a third that ours would retail. So as a marketer, I'm already doing the side-by-side comparison and I'm like, we're going to lose that fight. So what do I do now? So I ended up calling the founder of that company up and having a few phone calls with him. And at the end of the day, I ended up investing in their A round and pulled the plug on my system, wrote it off from a tax perspective as a loss. And they're doing well enough now that when they exit, I'll likely make back all of the millions of dollars that I lost.
You say this so calmly, like, well, okay, you decided to exit this massively successful business and take this, in my opinion, massive risk to start this thing that no one had ever done before until that point in the way you were trying to do it. And like, it was like no big deal, but it seems like it was such a big deal to walk away from all that money, all that success, everything that was working. How did you do that?
Yeah, no, I say, you know, I guess I can say that things are, you know, I can say that calmly looking back on it now, but in reality, it almost killed me physically from the stress. I literally almost died about a year and a half ago. So,
well, what do you mean?
The amount of stress that it took to keep that machine fed, the amount of stress that comes from putting all of your chips on the table and go all in, which is what I did. I didn't save anything in reserve. I sold my house. I put millions of dollars into that venture. And to not have that work out while still maintaining, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 a month burn from employees and marketing and all of that other stuff, without being able to take a break is super stressful. And I have always been really good at dealing with that. I'm an adrenaline junkie. I'll work all day fueled on caffeine and then I'll wind down at night with a glass or two of wine and then I'll go race cars on the weekend. And so that's how I lived for the last 15 years. I didn't know any different. The challenge or the difference was that I took for granted is that my body's ability to keep up with that lifestyle was not what it was when I was in my 20s. So one particularly stressful day, I just kind of felt a click in my head, and that was the last time I could fall asleep. And when I say that, I don't mean I had insomnia and I had a difficult, had difficulty falling asleep. I mean, I went five, six, seven days straight without a single minute of sleep, which almost killed me.
Yeah. And, do you become delusional or do you, are you?
Yeah. I mean, I was couch bound and just went from the couch on 12 hours to the bed for 12 hours, taking all kinds of medication. I think I took, Zequil, all of the over the counter stuff that you can think of, and 20 milligrams of Ambien, wow. 5 milligrams of Xanax, and that would get me an hour to an hour and a half.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I know you've been very open with your audience about your health scare and everything that happened. What made you open up about it?
I had to, because I had frankly disappeared. The only thing that I was able to continue to do for about a year was put out the podcast each week. Somehow I could manage to get online for an hour, talk to somebody and ask them a few questions and get that off to my editor. And that was basically all I did for almost a year now. I had to, it was a really interesting balance because I needed to make people aware of what was going on because people were asking questions. And I also didn't want to talk about it very much because I didn't want it to become a part of my identity or this self-fulfilling prophecy. So I'm very mindful of the language that I use and the words that I use. So when I talk about it these days, even though I'm still dealing with it, I've recovered quite a bit. I'm recovering from insomnia, or I'm healing, I'm getting better. And that's the language that I've used during the last 12 months as I have, had to work on this. Essentially, getting better has become my full-time job. And I've had to pursue it as if an athlete was training for, a professional sporting event, basically. So
health is everything.
Yeah.
That lifestyle was hard enough to keep up when I was in full production. Trying to do it when I'm at 10% capacity was even worse. So it was kind of a spiral.
I think that your recovery or your road to recovery will inspire a lot of other people to get out of their own way and make space for themselves to be better.
I know for a fact that it was the single biggest challenge I've ever been through, but it was also the best thing that ever happened to me for a few reasons. One, I know if I had continued going down the road that I had, which was stress, caffeine, adrenaline, et cetera, I would have probably had a heart attack pretty soon. But because none of the doctors I talked to knew what was going on, none of them had seen this before. They didn't know what to tell me or how to approach it. I had to pursue anything and everything in order to try and recover, which was, I essentially treated it like PTSD, which is how do you bring your nervous system back into balance after essentially you've got your parasympathetic, which is your sleep and recover side of your nervous system, and your sympathetic, which is your fight or flight. And basically after 10, 15 years of entrepreneurship, every day is fight or flight for the most part. It doesn't stop. You've got to show up and keep the employees paid, and it just doesn't end. The sympathetic side of my system just got stuck in the on position, and it was just 100 miles an hour, 24/7, and it just wouldn't stop. So I, went down so many different avenues to recover from that. The plant medicine avenue's probably been the single most eye-opening and beneficial. So doing MDMA therapy, doing ketamine therapy, doing Wachuma, those experiences and what I learned from that was completely life-changing. And if I hadn't gone through this, I probably never would have found those things. So just having those experiences and taking away the lessons I learned from that was worth the last year of hell for that. So, yeah.
Your current brand, where you house educational courses, recently went under a change from self-made man to, or self-made, no, self-made man, right?
Self-made man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To your name. Did any of this impact that, or what made that transformation?
Yeah, so after I pulled the plug on Evergrow, Self-Made Man was already the name of the podcast, so that was the natural place to put my attention. You know, we had a great following of the show. And the goal there, once again, I decided to kind of push my limits into a new area that I had not explored before, which was education for entrepreneurs, but taking me out of the equation. So previously I had been the face or the leader or the guru, if you will, of my businesses. And there's a lot of benefits to doing that. But the downside is that you're building an asset you can never sell. And I wanted to build a business that I could potentially sell. So to me, Self-Made Man was my vehicle for doing that, an opportunity for that. So we spent a year filming 50 of some of the best quality classes you can get. We rented different studio locations in Austin, full 15-person production team, flew in some of the most amazing entrepreneurs in the world to produce these classes with, filmed them all in 360 VR. So you could essentially put a VR helmet on and sit in the crowd and look around and be in the studio. And we put those up on a platform that we custom programmed, very similar, if you're familiar with Skillshare or Udemy, same level of technology they did, which was a huge mistake in hindsight. And so that was another multi-7-figure gamble that added to the stress. And it was successful by some people's means, or definition of success. I think we did 250 grand in revenue in our first month. But again, we put well over $1 million into the development of it. And it never really caught on the way that I expected it would, because it's the deal of the century. We were selling access to all of the classes for $19 a month, which was, you know, probably 500 grand in production or value. But no one was really buying them in the way that I expected. And so I asked a lot of very smart marketing friends of mine why they thought that was. And they had a couple of answers. I assumed that Udemy and Skillshare and Creative Live and those companies were really successful, because if you look at their available metrics that are visible publicly, they look successful. They've got millions of fans on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. But what I found out was that all of them had raised tens of millions of dollars in VC money. I think Creative Live had raised over $70 million in VC capital. And last year, they laid off half of their employees. And so I was not able to really acquire customers profitably at scale for Self-Made Man, which I couldn't quite equate how were they doing it. And at the end of the day, they weren't. So that was an assumption that was a mistake to make. And the other big insight was that people had followed me and that I had had the success that I'd had because they wanted me. They wanted to learn from me. They wanted my expertise and the voice and the knowledge that I brought to them. And by taking myself out of the equation and putting other individuals that they didn't know or have rapport with, they didn't really want to buy that. And so that was another really interesting lesson learned. And so I think about 3 or 4 months ago, I decided to end the Self-Made Man brand and just change it over to Mike Dillard. Having gone through the health crisis that I have gone through, I have a new appreciation for just building a great lifestyle business, doing what I'm really good at doing, helping people transform their lives, not worrying about building a $100 million company, not having an exit. Just being glad that I'm still here and can do what I can do, and appreciating that instead of always pushing my boundaries and pushing the edge. And so that to me was the turning point to getting back to a much different approach to life and business, where I really pushed the boundaries in a big way and learned a lot from that, but it's not worth, you know, almost dying from. So that's why I ended up changing the brand, and I'm really going back to just serving people one to many in my own voice. So
cool.
I will tell you that just my interpretation or my feeling about what it is that you're doing, the reason that people are compelled to follow you or listen to you is because you're vulnerable in what you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You're willing to tell them about the successes that you had and also the failures and the health ramifications as a result of it. And I think people want to know the real story, not just the bullshit of how much money you made and how many cars you got.
Not just the smiling face with your boat on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what's really interesting is that goes back to my network marketing days. So when I was failing for 5 years, all you'd hear about are the success stories.
Right.
And as I got to really get to know them and what they were doing, I was like, you're busting your ass and you've been doing it for years to get to where you are. And if you told people what it really took to get here, no one would join.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And that really irked me. And I was like, I want to know the truth, because I'm sitting here thinking this is supposed to be easy and that I'm an idiot and I can't make this work. Where in reality, if you had just given me proper expectations of what was required, I would understand that, accept that, and move into that rather than sit here and constantly question why I'm not having the kind of success you alluded that I would have. And so that goes back 20 years. And I was like, I'll never sit here and look somebody in the face and tell them this is easy. Yeah, it started back then.
They don't actually say this is easy. What they say is, if I can do it, you can do it.
Then you can do it, yeah.
Which is total bullshit, from the word get-go.
But they won't tell you what they're doing.
Right.
None of them ever told me that they were making 200 calls a day. None of them ever told me that they were spending X amount of money on hosting events or whatever it may be. That was never mentioned. And I just thought that was dishonest. So I just made it a point from day one that I'm just going to tell people straight up what it's like to be an entrepreneur, for better or worse.
And so you're a podcaster now. Mm-hmm. And you have like one of the most amazing podcasts, even more amazing than ours, if I dare say that. What do you attribute your podcasting prowess to be?
I started the podcast because I needed a way to deliver value to my audience on a regular basis in the most time efficient way possible while I was working on Evergrow. And out of all of the options to choose from, doing YouTube's videos, writing blog posts, writing emails, the most time efficient way was a podcast, because I didn't have to think of the topic or deliver the value each week. I could just interview someone. So that's why I started the podcast.
We want everyone to go listen to your podcast. What's the one episode they should go listen to right now?
Oh gosh. So it's just the Mike Dillard podcast now. And if you're an entrepreneur, man, the one that instantly comes to mind is the one that I did with Josh Bazzoni, who is a very successful entrepreneur and friend of mine here in Austin. And he built a $100 million nutrition company in 12 months. And he talks about how they did it, specifically how they hired people, how they acquired their customers. And that was one of the first episodes we did many years ago. But there was just so many nuggets and pearls of wisdom in there that it's the first one that comes to mind.
Well, hey, thank you for sharing your story on our show. This has been amazing.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me.
So that was amazing. And first of all, his entrepreneurship is amazing. Second of all, his health recovery is phenomenal. It made him stop dead in his tracks, realize what was important to him way beyond money, and focus in on it. And it made him not just stay at home, but but value his time at home. Because a lot of people stay at home, they don't do shit except stay on a couch and eat potato chips. And if they read The Secret, hope their Chevrolet shows up in the driveway. But I think that...
No, they manifest it. Come on.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
They hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's a guy who not that has his shit together, has his life together.
So I thought it was really interesting when he was talking about network marketing, because he was talking about the hope that the uplines give you. And so many people are against network marketing. I'm not against it in any sense. I'm against the dream that they give you. And they don't tell you the real truth, which is like, if you want to make it in network marketing, most likely you're not going to just work that 1 hour while your baby's napping. Like, that's not how this works, yeah. Okay? Like, that people do not become a success because they worked 1 hour a day, 5 days a week in network marketing. Those people who are doing amazing and are at the top of the chain and bringing in $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a month, they're working their ass off, yeah, at least in the beginning.
They're working 21 hours a day, sleeping for three.
Yeah.
But let me just share this with you, diehards. The value of network marketing is not only in the money that you make. Network marketing teaches you attitude, belief, and the desire to succeed. When I started my sales career, I started in network marketing back when it was called multi-level marketing in the 70s. And I learned personal development. We took a 4-hour sales class every day on how to get better, how to think better. And if it wasn't for that, literally, I couldn't do what I do today. So I'm only challenging you that you may not want to succeed at network marketing, but it will give you the tools to succeed in whatever you decide to do.
100% agree. So
let's look at it from the positive perspective of, it's likely you will not be the 1 out of 4 or 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 10 that succeeds, but it's very likely that you'll be the 9 out of 10 that leaves there with a great education about how to succeed in life.
And a great training in sales. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Now, we should also point out that Mike talked about the risks and the rewards of being an entrepreneur. You risk everything.
Yeah.
And he did risk everything.
He literally did risk everything, yeah. But he was willing to. And so the question for you is, what are you willing to risk? Are you willing to risk everything? We have so many diehards who, you know, talk to us privately, message us or whatever, and they're wanting, you might be listening right now thinking, I want to leave my sales job. Mm-hmm. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to make this thing that I'm working on real. I want to sell it. But what are you willing to risk?
You think that there's a side hustle deal in your life and keeping the safety of your job. And I'm challenging you, you either fucking do it or you don't.
Well, when Mike risked it all, he didn't like go half ass in, right? He didn't say like, well, I'm going to keep this other job on the side just to have some income and do this other thing and try to make this thing successful that I'm risking everything for. No, he said, fuck that. I'm going all in.
When you heard his story, you were like cheering him on.
Yeah.
It was like there was a triumph in it. And you said, oh, I quit this to do this. Way to go.
Yeah.
Like, way to go. And then what happened? Like, you're on the edge of your seat to find out what happened next.
Yeah.
So it's an up and down story. I would really hope that you would share this particular episode with every single entrepreneur that you know or every single person that wants to become an entrepreneur so that they can understand what the process is and what the risks and rewards are, and anybody that you know in network marketing.
For sure. Now, I want to talk about taking care of yourself because obviously it's something that Mike has now learned to do, and it's something that a lot of people in general need to learn how to do. I don't think it's something we grow up necessarily talking about. Like, you don't talk about, I need a mental health day today, so I'm just taking the day off to like clear my mind. You don't talk about, you know, I just really need time to get a massage or do the things you need to do for yourself. Like, so Jeffrey, what are some of your favorite self-care strategies?
First of all, you need to take an annual physical that includes a total blood test protocol so you can see if there's any dangers in your life. That's number one. Number two, most people don't realize that they're in the shitter because it happens slowly day by day. Like, look down at your waist right now and see if there's a few extra pounds on there that you don't really want. And what are you doing about it?
It didn't happen overnight.
Right. It happened day by day. You got the spaghetti stomach or the beer stomach or whatever it is. And you're going, well, I can get rid of this anytime I want. I just don't want to right now. That's bullshit. It's like smoking. I can stop smoking anytime I want. I just don't want to right now. I'm enjoying
it. Well, it's much easier to put on the weight than it is to take off the weight.
Tell me about it.
It's much easier to take care of yourself a little bit every day than not take care of yourself at all and all of a sudden have this illness or major thing you have to deal with.
You can tie it right back to network marketing because I developed the self-discipline to be able to do it myself. And that's what you have to do as a diehard. You just take care of yourself first or your family will suffer, your income will suffer, your life will suffer. Take care of yourself.
I have found that my morning routine, like that incorporating meditation into my morning routine and then using meditation throughout the day whenever I feel I need it, has really helped me tremendously just to be more grounded and to slow down. And then, you know what, like, our friend, Michael Silverman, he has like specific days a month that are CEO days. And I would recommend this to everybody where, whether you're a CEO or a salesperson or whatever you're doing, like take a specific day a month, block it out on your calendar so that they're your days where you're focused on yourself. Maybe it's going to the beach and looking at the beach. Maybe it's driving to the lake, you know, drive. Maybe it's just driving. Maybe it's getting a massage, but actually doing things intentionally that'll help you take care of you.
Let me give you the unwoo part of it.
Yeah.
Stop eating sugar, stop eating white flour, and stop drinking. If you do those three things, you're going to win. No, I understand. The woo is there, but it is. People can't visualize going to the beach on an everyday basis.
No.
But I promise you, you're eating bread every day, and I promise you, you're eating sugar every day. So stop doing that.
Well, like this past weekend, I booked a treatment at a hotel that was only like an hour away from us. Mm-hmm. And I spent the entire day sitting outside by the pool in the sun. And then I went and got my treatment inside, and I was allowed access to the pool because I booked the treatment and had access to the spa all day long. So like you can do things like that for yourself.
And
don't tell me you don't have enough money to do it. Go make more money.
The alternative is I'm writing a book. And I had the discipline to sit there all day on a Saturday or a Sunday and put another 10,000 words to paper so that I could have legacy. So everything is a discipline. You have to decide what is your discipline. In the meantime, we have another discipline, and that is that this show is pretty much over.
Well, until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and discipline yourself. Make a sale, even if your ass falls off.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellerDieNetwork.com.